Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and as I'm putting this week's episode together, I have to admit that I got transfixed by the story regarding former Michigan head football coach Sherrone Moore. Now, news broke on Wednesday of his seemingly immediate dismissal. I don't know. I think we're going to learn more about that one. After it was apparently revealed that he, Sherrone Moore, had an inappropriate relationship with a female staffer on the team. But then the news took an immediate turn when it was reported later on in the night on Wednesday night that he was arrested in Pittsfield Township and booked at the Washtenaw County Jail for an alleged assault investigation. Wow. Now, all kinds of stories are being shared on social media, and I'm waiting to hear from authorities on exactly what happened and exactly why he was arrested. I mean, there is speculation that Moore threatened himself and then threatened the staffer, but something took a drastic wrong turn. That being said, there's always been this submarine attitude when it comes to Michigan football. There has been. And the same goes for many big-time money-making machines throughout college football. And I'm a college football fan, I have to tell you. But I have to call him as I see him. I mean, Penn State went through its bunker mentality when the Jerry Sandusky scandal broke. Same for Ohio State a decade ago, and same for USC back in the 2000s, and on and on. I mean, Michigan State just lost all of its wins during the last few seasons because it put too much power into few hands. If I were on the U of M Board of Regents, I would vote to clean house immediately. And clean house not just within the program, but throughout the entire athletics department. When people are given power and they are given money without very little oversight, it ends up corrupting so many on the inside, does it not? And I'd like to share this blue sky post from MSU education professor Dr. Josh Cowan, who's been on the show here a few times, if you recall, because as usual, Dr. Cowan hits the nail right on the head. He said, on the Sherrone Moore story, do we think a situation like this would be handled with more or less accountability if private equity were running U of M athletics today? Dr. Cowan's, of course, referring to the story of how the Big Ten is trying to join up, cozy up with a private equity firm to help pay for its athletics. I mean, what in the world could go wrong there, right? I mean, whenever private equity gets involved, nothing ever goes wrong, right? Oh, man. I don't know. We'll have to see where that story goes. Leftoflansing@gmail.com is my email. You can follow me on Blue Sky, Twitter, the Gram, and Facebook. And yes, also on the YouTube. Thanks for all of your likes and comments on the video shorts I post there. And also for those of you who listen to the weekly show there as well, subscribe to the show on YouTube and subscribe and give a good 5-star review wherever you're listening to the show. And of course, as always, thank you for listening. Coming up here in just a few moments, John King, editor-in-chief at Michigan Advance, one of my favorite online publications on Michigan news and politics. He will join me. Now, John wrote a column last week on Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's puzzling embrace of big tech and their data centers here in the state. And John argues how he thinks this will damage her image of putting working-class Michiganders first. Now, I've shared similar thoughts and frustrations on the governor's abrupt switch when it comes to her politics, because that woman from Michigan has turned into quite the appeaser for the Trump regime. I mean, come on, that's obvious with her push for data centers backed by big tech and the big tech bros who are strong backers for the Trump regime that's backing this artificial intelligence bubble. But the people are fighting back. They really are. And we're seeing a few battles won by the working class against the big tech oligarchy and its government stooges right here in Michigan. News broke a few days ago how that proposed massive AI data center in Howell Township that was backed by Zuckerberg's Meta is now on hold. It's been put on hold thanks to constant opposition and upheaval by the people in that community. And it's bringing people from the left. It's bringing people together from the right and from independents. It's bringing everybody together in opposition of the big tech bros and those within government who are backing them. I mean, the data center supporters and financial backers have decided to table this issue in Howell Township for now. And I suspect they believe after some time passes, you know, the people will just forget about it. And then they'll go full steam ahead with the project. Now, I don't think that's the case, but maybe they're right, considering in just how in a few weeks, Obamacare insurance premiums will rise drastically since MAGA Republicans in Congress refused to extend the Obamacare tax credits for millions of working class families. And yes, I know. They want to kill the ACA since that's the goal of their dear leader Trump. I mean, his main motivation, of course, is always attacking his enemies, always getting retribution for himself. He doesn't care about the working class. He only cares about himself and also enriching he and his family while doing it. So his main motivation is erasing the policies of his Democratic predecessors. And in response to that idiotic move, Senate Republicans are offering health savings accounts, oh, here we go again with that, which won't do a damn thing to lower cost and will end up insuring less people since they won't be able to afford anything if they get seriously ill. I mean, it's the same damn plans they offered back when Obamacare was being debated, and it's the same stupid mindset and arguments and solutions they gave for Social Security. Just give people some money and they'll be happy with that. Meanwhile, we can finally drain the resources and drain these government programs like Obamacare and Social Security. They'll just vanish. Hey, aren't you thrilled, though, that the Democratic congressional leadership allowed itself to get played like this and gave in to congressional MAGA Republicans and the Trump regime and that government shutdown? I mean, that seems to be working well for everyone, doesn't it? Now, all this is happening while there's a measles outbreak in South Carolina. According to NBC News data, the K-12 vaccination rate for measles in Spartanburg County in South Carolina was 90% for the 2024 and 25 school year. That's below the 95% levels that doctors say is needed to protect against the outbreak. In neighboring Greenville County in South Carolina, the MMR vaccination rate was 90.5%. Oh, is that just nice? It's dropping below the level we should be at. Freedom, everybody. That's freedom. Freedom to get sick and freedom to get everyone else seriously sick. I mean, that's really heartwarming news to hear right now as the holiday season ramps up, isn't it? Same with Health and Human Services nutjob Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr.'s hand-picked vaccine committee's decision last week to end the worldwide recommendation to give babies the hepatitis B vaccination at birth. As CNBC notes, the move overturns that guidance, which has been credited with driving down infections in children by 99% since it was first introduced 3 decades ago, and is widely considered to be a public health success story. But scientists, those dorks, those nerds, what did they know? But hey, you'll get $1,000 to deal with all these fun ailments hitting you and your kids. All right, $1,000 in a health savings account. Good luck with that, everyone. And don't forget how the regime is dropping fuel efficiency standards, protections for the water we drink, and yes, allowing for more and more fossil fuel to be burned, like the J.H. Campbell coal-fired power plant in Ottawa County, which was supposed to close last spring, but was blocked by dear leaders, so it's still pumping dirty coal into the air throughout Michigan and parts of the Midwest. But don't worry. Don't worry, everybody. All you have to do are pull-ups, and that will make everything better. Just do some pull-ups. Of course, I'm talking about that ridiculous video of Kennedy and Transportation Secretary and Road Rules clown Sean Duffy doing pull-ups at an airport. I'm not sure how that keeps people safe from measles or from rising insurance costs or from planes falling from the sky, but that's apparently the plan that'll save every American. Hey, that's the Trump regime working overtime for you. Oh, and Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Haley Stevens introduced articles of impeachment against Robert Kennedy Jr., which, you know, got some praise even from her progressive challenger in the Democratic Senate primary race here in Michigan, Dr. Abdul El Said. And I get it that he's a doctor who's worked in public health for many years, and I can only imagine the daily frustration he's filled with watching Kennedy destroy decades of science to fulfill his worm-eaten brain. But I think I'm with the other Senate candidate in that primary race on this issue, and that I'm talking about State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who essentially called out Haley Stevens for doing a performative stunt. Of course, Kennedy is unqualified and is causing harm and danger to this nation in a myriad of ways. But articles of impeachment, they aren't going anywhere in this MAGA Congress. Please attack Kennedy on a daily basis and use your bully pulpit to highlight how he and dear leader are endangering lives and the country. But this impeachment nonsense, it will go nowhere. Instead, here's what I would suggest for Haley Stevens, who's the Democratic Party leadership's choice to become the Senate nominee next year because she loves corporate cash and AIPAC cash. Maybe she should spend some time developing a message and actually developing policies designed to help the working class. I mean, it's one thing to attack RFK Jr., but if you ain't proposing health care for all and would instead rather accept donor money from insurance companies, then your campaign is all performative. It is all shtick. And by the way, I haven't noticed if Haley Stevens has the support of Emily's List, which is a corporate Democratic Party fundraising branch. I do know that it supported her over Andy Levin, the progressive Andy Levin, in their Democratic primary a few years ago. But I did read Emily's List is backing Bridget Brink for Michigan's 7th Congressional District. Now, that's the same district where strong progressive candidate William Lawrence, who I had on the show last month, is running. And if you recall, Lawrence is taking the fight to MAGA Republican Tom Barrett, who still refuses to show up for town halls. And Lawrence is doing it by not begging for corporate PAC money. Now, I've gotten wiser to understand that Emily's List is not a friend of the working class. They are a friend of the corporate donor class. And before I receive outrage from some that I'm suddenly misogynistic or something like that, please recall that my favorite congressperson in Michigan is Rashida Tlaib, and that a few of my favorite state senators like Stephanie Chang from Detroit and state representatives Emily Diefendorf, Carrie Reingans, and Betsy Kafia are my favorites because they fight for working class interests over corporate interests. Speaking of which, if you heard my Friday short last week, you heard about that Detroit news story in which DTE Energy's dark money nonprofit is handing out bribes. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Can't say that. I mean donations to a nonprofit that contains some former staffers of Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And it's also handing out cash to a nonprofit that supports MAGA State House Speaker Matt Hall. Now, DTE is telling you that this means nothing because that's what businesses are known for. Spending on things that won't help their bottom lines, right? Yeah, right. Of course, DTE and Consumers Energy are all in on these artificial intelligence data centers since, hey, they'll get to provide all the energy for these data centers. That's a lot of cash for them. And they'll get to do it by providing more fossil fuel energy. All right. And it's probably just a coincidence that Whitmer removed some people from the state regulatory board overlooking electricity rate hikes and giving the green light to data centers. That's the Michigan Public Service Commission. And she decided to replace them with industry insiders and allies. But hey, nothing to see here. And as for Matt Hall, he's all about ending corporate welfare. I mean, that's what he tells us all the time. Well, except when it comes to DTE and Consumers Energy and dear leader Trump's big tech bro friends. Matt Hall's kind of silent on that one. Oh, and Matt Hall and his MAGA allies in the State House did celebrate this week in ending over $600 million in already approved money for clean energy projects. You know, that's helping create jobs and making this a cleaner and more energy efficient state. And then there's this interesting one. They've removed money for a charter school accountability database because, you know, we can't hold charter schools accountable. I mean, are you crazy? It will reveal the failure of Betsy DeVos's plans to end public schools. We can't have anything like that. You see, it's those kinds of moves that has the working class in a populist rage today. They see both political party establishments working against them, but working for corporate interest. Whitmer and Matt Hall are part of the same problem, and the voters are sick of it. Just listen to this. A recent YouGov poll shows that when respondents were asked, do the rich have too much political power? 80% said yes. 80%. Now, that same poll dug deeper into those numbers, showing among independents, 81% said yes, the rich has too much political power. And among Republicans, 66% said yes. 66% is a good number, actually, and it explains why dear leader's numbers are cratering and why the regime's trying to start a war with Venezuela. Or maybe it's this.
But I do want to talk about the economy, sir, here at home. And I wonder what grade you would give
A plus.
A+.
Yeah, A++++.
Are you feeling like this is an A+ economy? You know better. Coming up in a moment, John King from Michigan Advance will join me. You're listening to LOL.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here. And we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
Well, if you listen to the show throughout the year, you know that I spend a lot of time citing stories and columns from the many awesome reporters at Michigan Advance. In fact, I just recently shared a column written by Michigan Advance's editor-in-chief, John King, on Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's strange embrace of these big tech data centers, which puts her on the other side of working-class voters, voters that she once seemed in large part to connect with during both of her political campaigns for governor. Now, I always tell you that while we've got some terrific reporters at other publications that cover Michigan news and politics, Michigan Advance is always one of my favorites. And as we get closer to wrapping up 2025, thankfully, I thought we should check in with the eminent John King to provide his insights on Michigan politics, political news coverage, and other stories that he and his staff have been covering at Michigan Advance. So, John King, welcome to the show again, and thanks so much for coming back on to talk with us.
Of course. Thank you, Pat. Always a pleasure.
Hey, this is the first time having you on the show since you were named editor-in-chief of Michigan Advance, which I believe happened back in May, if I'm not mistaken.
March.
March. Yeah. Okay. Well, how's it been going? And, you know, maybe you can tell us what's been the biggest change for you since starting that new role there.
It's going really well. You know, I would say the biggest change is, for me, is sort of moving more into a obviously being an editor as more than a reporter or a writer,
right.
But it's helping other people. It's sort of using my experience and my skills to help our other reporters kind of find their voice and make a story better. And so that's a little bit different. I mean, I'm a journalist at heart. And so when I see a good story, I want to kind of just jump in there and start writing, reporting and digging and finding out. And so my responsibilities now lay more in making sure that our staff writers can best do that, utilizing their skills and finding which way to help sort of develop a story. So I'm moving more into the background in terms of developing stories and then sort of letting the reporters themselves, kind of giving them the tools and the direction they need to report it the best they can. So it's a bit of a different gear and I'm enjoying it.
And of course, as we've covered here before, when you've been on the show in the past, you are a veteran journalist who worked both in radio and newspapers, and that was predominantly in the Livingston County area, right?
Yeah. I spent 20 years as a news director at the radio station in Howell.
Do you miss radio ever?
You know, I do, and I don't.
I know what you mean.
You know, I love the years I had in radio. I just look back on it, and I'm so glad that I had them. And I worked with some great people and I had a lot of fun and a lot of professional fulfillment. The industry now, though, is so, you know, diminished. Mm-hmm. That I think a lot of that professional fulfillment and the joy and the fun is not there. Not that nobody's experiencing that, but I just think there's less people experiencing less of it.
You know, John, at my last radio job that I had in Saginaw, when I was hired there back in the 2000s, I would say that the newsroom had around, five or six full-time reporters. And by the time I left in 2023, it probably had around two, maybe three full-time news staff there. And of course, not to mention some part-timers, but I was seeing it shrinking there as well.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, two to three would actually be, wow, well, you got a great newsroom.
True. That's true. Hey, John, for some of our new listeners here who may not exactly be familiar with Michigan Advance, can you tell us what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Michigan Advance is part of the state's newsroom organization, and we're nonprofit news, you know, no paywalls, no ads. And the state's newsroom has newsrooms in all 50 states. And we cover primarily the heart of our coverage is legislative capital coverage. But it's so much more than that. That's, like I said, the heart of it. But we really cover politics in general across Michigan, but also social issues and, you know, legal issues. And then this year, we've spent a good proportion of our time covering the federal fallout, the impact of what's going on in D.C. and how that's impacting us here in Michigan. But as a nonprofit newsroom, you know, I think that frees us up to not be beholden to corporate interests. And it allows us to really follow a story where it goes and not really worry about stepping on toes necessarily in terms of, like, you know, sponsors or things like that. And so it really is refreshing to have that. And I personally think that nonprofit news, non-corporate news, to be more precise, I think is going to be the future of journalism and will hopefully sort of carry forth that fourth estate, you know, sense for our country moving forward.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Speaking of Livingston County, since we've already talked about your years in journalism and in radio there in Livingston County, I recently had a person that I think you know pretty well, Casey Helton. She was on the show here a few weeks ago to talk a bit about Livingston County politics and also state and national politics. But she also really wanted to highlight the fight over this proposed artificial data center in Howell Township that is being reportedly backed by Meta. Now, as of this recording, it sounds like, John, like the opposition against that data center in Howell Township scored somewhat of a major victory in getting that project halted, at least for now. What can you tell us about the latest there?
Yeah. And Casey is obviously a very engaged citizen, we'll say, somebody who I've admired her activism. And I heard her on your show, and I thought it was a great conversation. As for the data center, as you know, yeah, it's halted for now. And it's halted is probably not the right word. It's on hold for now. I think if you talk to the organizers of the groups against it, they're looking at this as this was a strategic retreat, so to speak, by the backers of the data center. You know, there had been so much public opposition to this building towards the meeting that was supposed to take place this past Monday night and the vote that was supposed to take place at that meeting. And people were ready and they were going to attend. And then at really more or less the legal last minute, they call it off and say, oh, we're not going to vote on it. And they held the meeting anyway, and people did turn out and talk about it. But the opposition would say that, and they have said, that they feel like this was done purposefully, that this is a way to sort of just deflate the opposition. You get everyone's all ready to get to that moment, and then you kind of pull back, and then you kind of see maybe you slip it in 6 months. Maybe you kind of come at it at a different angle. And, you know, by that point, maybe they're thinking people will have moved on, or there'll just be less opposition and they can move it through. If that's their plan, I think it's a bad plan. I don't think the opposition to this is going away anytime soon.
I don't think so either. Yeah. And I think that would be a bad plan. You know, in the story that was written there in Michigan Advance by veteran reporter Ben Solis, he mentioned the Van Gilder family who was putting up the land for that, well, I think, 1,000 acre data center before, of course, they announced that they have put everything on hold or that they were pulling out of the deal. What do you know about that family since you've been around there for quite some time?
Prominent family, big name in the community. I think they completely, this is just my opinion, I don't know for a fact, but I my sense is they completely underestimated the opposition to this. And I think they may have been surprised by the level of opposition, the level of anger. Opposition doesn't even really sufficiently cover it. There's anger from people that this is even, you know, really being considered for a variety of reasons. Environmental being a big one, but not the only one. And so I think this was, in their mind, this was a way they thought, oh, this is, you know, a win-win. But I just don't think that they had really understood the level of opposition that was going to be, you know, thrown out here. And so perhaps pulling back here is a reaction to that. And, you know, maybe they'll look at this in a different way. I don't know. I mean, time will tell whether they just, you know, decide not to do this at all. Who knows?
Well, that brings me to the column, John, that you wrote last week, aptly titled, Whitmer's Data Center Enthusiasm Will Undo Her Record of Putting People First. And in your column, John, you said, the governor, who has demanded accountability from corporate interests like Enbridge and its Line 5 pipeline through the Straits of Mackinac, is now actively courting companies that demand immense public resources with long-term implications for the air we breathe and the water we drink in exchange for limited economic return. It's perplexing, you said, and hard not to wonder what changed. What is it about Governor Whitmer that she's looking, and I think, at that shiny new ball of big tech data centers as something that must be rushed through right now. And I guess maybe how is she looking at that as a political win as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think the point of my column was I truly am puzzled by this. And I took great pains when I wrote that really to sort of lay out up top all of the really solid progressive wins that this governor has shepherded through in her tenure and things that she's absolutely should be admired for. And so why at the end of her tenure, she's going out with this great enthusiasm towards data centers is truly puzzling. I look at it like I think she, from what I can tell, it is she sees it as a job creator. That's debatable. You know, it's investment in the state. It's something that will position Michigan well into the future. All of those things are, I think are, like I said, I think they're very debatable. They're not givens in any sense of the word. And so the puzzling part of this is that this is a governor who is a very smart person. And she's got political smarts. And I don't know why she's not deploying them here, because this just doesn't make any sense from even a political point of view. And I think she does risk and is risking tarnishing her legacy by enthusiastically supporting these. And, you know, I think the key line in that was right toward of my column was really towards the end when I said she doesn't need to do any of this. In other words, from just a purely political point of view, look, the data centers, the people that want to put in these data centers, the utilities that want to service them and all the rest, all of the supporters, they're going to do this anyway. She does not have to be out front cheerleading it at all. She went out of her way to submit public comment to the MPSC for a hearing, which was held last week, an online hearing for the public to speak, for the members of the public, residents to speak their mind. And of course, she is the governor, certainly has the right and the ability to speak her mind too and put her positions forth. But I just question if that was the right venue to do that and if why. She doesn't need to do any of this. These decisions are going to be made really, I don't want to say regardless of what she says, but it doesn't make any sense. She does not need to be out cheerleading in front of these. So this is just from a purely political point of view. She can sort of sit back and let this process happen, you know, not be so clearly identified as being a supporter of something that is what I see as a real horseshoe issue. And by that, I mean, I see people from the left and the right coming together. And so MAGA supporters and people that attend the No Kings rallies are coming to the same meetings and saying kind of the same things. And that is something that people should pay attention to. So I don't understand her enthusiasm for these. I think that the data centers themselves, I think it's a bubble. I think it's kind of like an energy drink, you know, like suck that thing down, you get a couple hours of energy and, you know, and then you crash. And I feel like this is going to be a crash. I think in 5 to 10 years, the technology itself will be outdated. These data centers are just, they don't make a lot of sense from on a lot of different levels. So it's just very, very puzzling.
You're definitely not the only person who believes that there would be a bubble burst here real quick when it comes to this whole move. I thought another good point that you made in that column is how Whitmer's embrace of these massive data centers is putting her right in line with Donald Trump's vision of data centers flooding towns across America. And it got me wondering while I was reading that, do you think she's doing this to try to, in maybe in one way, appease Trump even more by appearing to be enthusiastic, not appearing, by being enthusiastic for these data centers? And of course, that helps big tech, which, you know, gave lots of money to his campaign. Do you think she believes this will help in whatever this charm offensive that she's trying to do with the White House and especially with Trump as a way to make sure that he doesn't somehow screw Michigan in the end? Do you think that's what this is all about, at least how she's thinking it?
It's a great question. I will say this. It certainly won't hurt in terms of appeasing the president. But I think that, as has been pointed out numerous times and in numerous other instances, there is no appeasing this president.
Yeah.
Again, I go back to somebody, you know, in the governor who I feel has just demonstrated a lifelong political intelligence. And so this does not seem politically intelligent to me, that if you're going to appease or suck up to, or however you want to phrase it, to the president. It just doesn't make any sense on a lot of different levels. So if that is what she's doing, somehow she sees this as like, well, I'm going to go ahead and do this because I think it'll help me make sure that the president doesn't deploy National Guard troops to Detroit. I mean, let's use that as an example. Mm-hmm. That if she's truly doing this as a way to fend off the worst, it won't work. One tweet and that all that work can be undone. And so, and it also, and that's just looking at the political end of it. I think if you look at the moral end of it, it's really quite disturbing. Again, the puzzling, I'll use that word again. At the very same time that the governor and her administration are still trying to shut down Line 5 because of the environmental damage that it could do. And yet they are simultaneously trying to push through these data centers with environmental damage that it likely will do. There doesn't have to be a leak in a data center for it to contaminate the water. There doesn't have to be a leak in a data center or a rupture in a data center for it to suck up copious amounts of energy. That's what it's designed to do. And so how at the same time you could be wanting to shut down Line 5 and simultaneously push through data centers, it really just doesn't make any sense. And so that's the thing. I feel as if in pursuit of some short-term gain, her long-term legacy, and unfortunately, I think the impact to Michigan long-term will be quite negative. And so it's quite a shame.
And it is. And I agree with you that there are parts that, like, especially just looking at this politically, that are perplexing. But maybe one part for me, John, that isn't exactly perplexing when it comes to this issue of the governor banking on big tech is that she has been, throughout her tenure here, I mean, she has been a fierce and vociferous advocate for corporate subsidies, especially for manufacturing. I mean, that's just how it's been. And she hasn't really backed down, even though there was at least half, I would say, of the Democrats in when they used to have control of the state legislature were against it. Her throwing money at these corporations, which haven't exactly turned into a lot of big job numbers that were promised to us, it just seems like this is kind of what she does believe, I think, fundamentally. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's a very astute observation, and you're absolutely correct. But in terms of that being the track record, absolutely. But how's that worked out?
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, that's where you just kind of just you're
it's
done,
sad.
Just left
it's really
your
sad
head.
That she it's sad that she keeps on doing the exact same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess, you know, as I noted in the column, what she's risking here is transforming what I call, you know, a strong people first narrative into what I call a muddled story of corporate appeasement and economic strategy on autopilot. And I use that phrase intentionally, that I feel like the economic strategy is on autopilot, that it is sort of like the sense of, well, we have to give these corporations all this money in terms of tax incentives and other things to entice them to come into the state, and then they'll create jobs. And you're like, it is not much different than trickle-down economics. That thing that has been perpetrating for decades, that if we just cut the rich taxes, we just cut the billionaires' taxes enough, that'll trickle down to the rest of us. And of course, that's just been this lie that has been, you know, told over and over and over and over again. And I feel like it's the same thing with the corporate appeasement in this corporate strategy. It's on autopilot. I don't see any real careful strategic thinking about how do we position this state into the future. I think that will be something that will, in the long term, will not be a high mark for the governor. That's where that sits for now. I just don't see that in the final year of her governorship that that's going to change.
And one more question on Governor Whitmer, since you've covered her for quite some time. Does her, avoidance of getting on Trump's bad side surprise you at all ever since he won last year?
Yeah. I don't know. There's no other word for it. You know, I think many people were surprised. And at first, there seemed to be a sense of post-election and heading into the beginning of his term, there seemed to be a sense of anticipation of sort of looking back, like how the antagonism that existed in the first Trump term between Whitmer and Trump, and how that was going to manifest itself in a second term. And the signs weren't great. Heading into him taking office again, she made a lot of statements and things that were not indicative of that there was going to be a lot of pushback. And once he took over and just began the whole Doge blitz and unconstitutional Project 2025 nonsense, there seemed to be a complete collapse. And at the time, I think some of the initial reaction was people were like, oh, it's kind of a rope-a-dope strategy, you know. Oh, she's playing the old man. You know, you just wait and see. And we're still waiting and we're not seeing. I used the example before about like a worst case scenario of like preventing the president from deploying the National Guard into Detroit. Yeah, that's not happened. It's certainly been threatened. You know, if that's the play, you're really, there's no other word for it than appeasement. To not look and say, you know, you have to take on this administration and it's blatantly unconstitutional actions, you cannot appease that. And as a political thing, I don't see how she positions herself for any, right now at least, for political life beyond being Michigan governor because of this appeasement, I think, of the president. And then I think her track record on things like data centers, not great. And it's not going to sit well with Democratic voters. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me what her political ambitions are. And maybe she doesn't have them, and that's fine. That's certainly her choice if that's how she wants to proceed. But again, I will come back to the word puzzling.
And look, I know I've kept up most of your time here, so just one more question. While we've got a slew of important statewide races coming up next year, do you think the primary races will give us a strong indication of what to expect next fall? And I'm thinking, John, off the top of my head, of the Democratic Senate primary race between Abdul Al-Sayed, Mallory McMorrow, and Haley Stevens. And I'm seeing that race, that primary race, as an important and I think insightful bellwether of what to expect here in Michigan, since you've got the establishment candidate with Congressman Haley Stevens, the progressive candidate with Dr. Al-Sayed, and State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who I'm guessing is trying to be the Goldilocks candidate, where she's trying to be progressive here, but not there. Am I wrong, John, to be looking at this particular race as a way to read where the electorate is or will be, especially the Democratic electorate?
No, not at all. I think that, I mean, absolutely, that is the race that I think a lot of people are looking at nationally. They're looking at it.
Yeah.
You laid out, I think, the various candidates well in terms of how they're positioned. And I think where not that long ago, an establishment candidate like Haley Stevens, who is clearly the preferred person from the DC set, they want her to be Michigan's next senator. You know, not that long ago, that was seen as a great benefit, an enhancement, advantage. I think it's becoming less of an advantage as time goes on. I think that in that race particularly, but also in other races elsewhere, I think taking AIPAC money is going to become more and more of an issue for Democrats across the country. I think if you're a Democrat running for any statewide or federal office, you're going to have some position strong on whether you take AIPAC money and where you stand on Gaza. Again, it just, you know, why is this issue recurring over and over again? And so when you look at the US Senate race, you take the Gaza issue and you look at that race and you see it, it's like you lay it over and it just perfectly aligns up with what you were just talking about. You have an establishment candidate who will not in any way substantially criticize Israel taking AIPAC money. You have a very progressive candidate in El-Sayed who has a long, strong record of criticizing Israel and its actions in Gaza. And then I think you have McMorrow, who has seen the light and is reckoning. I mean, and she's politically a very astute person as well. And I think she can read the tea leaves, you know, give her the benefit of the doubt that her recent stance on that issue is true and heartfelt. But I think it's also one that is sort of necessary to move on. So, yeah, I think the U.S. Senate race in that primary is going to be real key to how the party itself is going to move into the midterms and then into the 2028, election cycle.
Since you brought up, how the issue of AIPAC and AIPAC money will be, I think, an issue in that race for certain, I think also what we've been talking about here for about 20 minutes, data centers. I think that and is also going to be an issue in that Democratic primary race.
Yeah, just one of those issues that I think it draws instant feelings on the part of people. There's not a lot of people that are on the fence, on data centers. Well, I don't know. Let's find out some more. I think people have pretty much drawn their conclusions on that.
I think so.
And it's the same with Gaza and AIPAC money. I don't think there's like, and if you as a candidate are like, well, it's complex, and you try to kind of do a little shuffle and triangulate, people see right through that. And they're like, you just state your position and stick with it. You know, state your position and defend it. And the idea that somehow you can talk your way around it is not going to fly. I just think Democratic voters are exhausted. And they have had enough of a corporate strategy trying to triangulate every issue. I think that they are very hungry for some authenticity and some leadership. So we'll see how that plays out.
And that's a good place to leave it there. John King, Editor-in-Chief of Michigan Advance, thanks so much for your time and for all of your hard work and for your colleagues' diligent reporting throughout the entire year. I wish you a happy holidays, and I hope 2026 is a good one for you and everyone else there at Michigan Advance.
Yes, anytime, Pat. Thank you so much, and happy holidays to you as well.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
A special thanks to John King from Michigan Advance. I will provide a link to the article on Governor Whitmer's embrace of big tech data centers wherever you're listening, and I'll provide a link to John King's page so you can read his other stories and columns at Michigan Advance. I'd like to give some more thoughts on my last question to John on this Michigan Democratic Senate primary race next year, and that'll be the basis for this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. Michigan's Democratic primary race in the U.S. Senate in 2026 will be the race to watch here in Michigan, but like John said, it's going to be the race to watch for the rest of the country. Not only is beating MAGA Trump fanboy and millionaire lobbyist Florida Mike Rogers paramount, but it's just as important for Michigan Democrats to get this one right. And actually, it's important for national Democrats to get this one right, but it's not looking like they've learned anything of the last year. As we talked about, the Democratic primary race is between establishment candidate Congressman Haley Stevens from Birmingham and Oakland County, the sometimes progressive but sometimes left-of-center State Senator Mallory McMorrow of Royal Oak, which is also in Oakland County, and Wayne County's Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, a strong progressive and healthcare advocate who worked for the Detroit Health Department as well as Wayne County's Health Department. Now, as you heard John King astutely note, the issue of Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza and those who accept money from the American-Israeli lobby known as AIPAC will play and is already playing a huge role in the Senate primary race. Al-Sayed has always called the right-wing and corrupt Netanyahu-led Israeli government slaughter of the Palestinian people a genocide. State Senator McMorrow took her time before reaching a similar conclusion, as if she was kind of pushed to do so, that Israel's actions, you know, were genocidal, but better late than never, I suppose. However, Haley Stevens, who's got the strong backing of Chuck Schumer and all the other fossilized corporate Democrats in Washington, refuses to hold the right-wing Israeli government to account and has never once used the word genocide to describe Israel's actions. Not only that, but Haley Stevens is not ashamed by her history of receiving AIPAC money. And John is correct by noting those who accept AIPAC money will have a tough time explaining that to Democratic voters in that primary race. And he's also correct that Democratic base voters are tired, just tired of the failed corporate political games that has led to defeat after defeat after defeat. So AIPAC will play a key role in that race. And if I can pat myself on the back, I also believe the issue of data centers will be a major issue next year. And Congresswoman Haley Stevens has offered nothing but word salad whenever she's asked about data centers. And let's not forget that, as I said earlier in the show, we learned how Governor Whitmer replaced the clean energy champion on the Michigan Public Service Commission and replaced that person with a DTE and Consumers Energy Industry ally who also used to work for former Democratic State Speaker of the House, Joe Tate. Joe Tate, it must be noted, has announced his support towards Haley Stevens. It doesn't take much to read between the lines on that one. As for Mallory McMorrow, I haven't seen much in the way of news concerning her stances on these big tech data centers, but in the past, she has come out against corporate welfare, so I'd like to think that she's not completely on board with data centers, but we'll have to see. McMorrow, though, did post pictures of she and Governor Whitmer attending some Democratic Party fundraiser this past week, so I don't know. Abdul Al-Sayed wants federal protections for the communities that big tech is invading with their data centers, while many residents have no say. So, okay, that's all right, I guess. I mean, I think they're all going to have to clarify their stances on data centers since Michigan taxpayer money is spent on Michigan taxpayer money is spent on corporate welfare for these big tech bros, not to mention the campaign cash spent by DTE and Consumers Energy, who want to provide the power to these centers. But I also think another big issue will be healthcare, as insurance costs are about to skyrocket for millions once the ACA tax credits expire, thanks to dear leader Trump and his MAGA Republican majority. I mean, don't forget of the $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid from the MAGA Republican Congress as well. Don't forget about that one. People are going to suffer, and we're all going to pay for it. We are all going to pay for it. Now, as I stated in my opening, Republicans are proposing health savings accounts, which will hurt more working class Americans than help. I mean, come on. As Andrew Perez from Zedio pointed out, the health savings accounts would only be available to people who sign up for bronze-tiered or catastrophic health insurance plans. That means Republicans are deliberately pushing people into lower quality plans that have high deductibles and leave people saddled with higher out-of-pocket costs. But yet, the Republicans in Congress, they get the best kind of healthcare coverage. They don't think, though, that you and I deserve that kind of coverage. That's why we need Medicare for all. And Abdul El-Sayed wrote in The Guardian this week that it's time for Democrats to stop playing defense on healthcare and to start playing offense, and that includes fighting for Medicare for all. I've echoed the same argument for months. I hate watching Democrats always fighting to protect something, and they're always fighting to defend something. Stop it. Start going on the offense, because whenever you're fighting to protect or defend something, you always lose a little part of what you're defending. Haley Stevens does not support Medicare for all, and sadly, neither does State Senator Mallory McMorrow for some reason or another. That I am completely confused, and it is boggling my mind. So Gaza, data centers, and healthcare for all will be the main issues, which is all centering around voting for someone with bold policies to address these issues. The fight for 2026 isn't just about defeating corporate-loving MAGA Republicans. It's also about proving to the working class we can defeat corporate-loving Democrats as well. It's a Tea Party fight for Democrats in 2026.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. You can always contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Next week is the last show of the year, as I'll be taking Christmas and New Year's weeks off because I need to recharge the batteries a bit and enjoy the holiday season. But I will be back during the first full week in January, as we've got a pivotal political year to cover in 2026. And it's a year that could be a big year for the populist progressive movement. Now, at least for those of us here in mid-Michigan and northern Michigan, it's appearing like it'll be a white Christmas. So, hey, there's that. Little victories, I suppose. And I have a question. Is there a Hallmark movie, a Hallmark Christmas movie, which doesn't end with a kiss? I'm just wondering. Until next time, go Lions and take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
A plus.
A plus.
Yeah, A plus, 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 plus.
Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.